caliente como Al Pacino, comiendo puro pan y vino.
Bomba tu bomba, peladita mueve esa cadera. Bomba tu bomba, mamacita tú eres pura candela.
Candela, candela, candela. Sé que lo maneja que...
I just found out I'm listening to Fresh Air Community Radio. That's KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, St. Paul at onlinekfai.org. And you're listening to...
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org. Non-commercial and community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Chi Miigwech. Bonjour, relatives across our great Turtle Island and beyond. This is Deanna Standing Cloud, your host for the next hour on Medicine Bundle, the show celebrating Indigenous people and our allies as we creatively embrace our gifts of healing and connection. What's in your medicine bundle?
I'm just at me and say it with your chest. Last time I saw you, you couldn't see less. You playing checkers, but I'm playing chess. Well, you act on my ex, got a lot to address. How am I pretending Resi when I'm booked on the red? How am I pretending and blood quantums in the red? Got a tribal ID if you wanna act like the feds. Supposed to be a gorilla till let me show you what that is. I'm praying for you.
Buju, welcome to Medicine Bundle. It is April 2026, and it's just been a heck of a fast year, but a lot of stuff going on. I have someone very special on the call with us today, and I'm looking forward to just chatting and just catching up a little bit. Do you want to just introduce yourself there?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I always like to introduce myself in my Dakota language. Hello, everyone. My name is Leia Hale, and I come from the Dakota and Diné people, and I'm really happy to be here today.
Awesome. It's been so long since I've seen you. I ran into you and your beautiful family at last weekend, or a couple weekends ago, at the Champlain powwow, and I recognized your kids dancing, and I was like, I know, I remember them as little, and then I'm like, I think I know who those guys are. So it's mm-hmm. really good to see you and just run into your fam, and it's always good to see the professional, also like the projects that you're working on, and yeah, and I've known you for, I don't even know. I'm losing track.
Yeah, I think I've been out here for like a little over 14 years, probably going on 15. So I felt like I've known you since those very early days since I came out here.
But yes.
But yeah, it was awesome seeing you at the powwow. I'm always excited when I see your name on powwow flyers as a master of ceremonies. I believe you're a co-MC with Jerry Dearly. And yeah, it was awesome just to be there in community. And I always love watching my kids dance. My two boys, they dance grass dance. And my daughter, she dances fancy shawl. And my two younger ones, Chaitan and Taimi. They're both powwow ambassadors for their school, American Indian Magnet. So it's always, you know, really cool just to kind of see them out there at powwows, dancing their little hearts out and representing their school. So it was amazing to be there and to hear you as well and your awesome jokes that you throw in here and there at the powwow.
it's fun, and it's just to see their royalty, and I'm seeing their names. So during the powwow, a lot of the royalty, they'll be highlighted, so we'll introduce them in the grand, you know, in the grand entry, and I'm learning a lot of the protocol, so it was really cool to see all the kids. And then they have like a little a borrow system where you can, if you don't have regalia yourself, you can go and just, if you feel the spirit, to go and dress, you know, in the corner. I think Dina Johnson has a whole, like, I don't know, like a closet full of kids' regalia pieces. So that's always cool to see. It's like really seeing the babies that we've seen be born and like be leaders out there is just, it's something else. It's how aunties talk.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, I do remember seeing that that area where you're allowed to go and check out some really cool powwow outfits. And that's something that I've never seen before at powwows. And that's just really cool. Just a really innovative way to encourage our young people. So I'm definitely proud to be from this community, because this is the first time I've seen, you know, people provide, put hard work into sewing and creating to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to dance.
Because there's that barrier of resources, and then just sometimes, you know, families don't always have the folks to show people how to create things. So I think this community really has responded very well to like the opportunity gaps that we might feel in the urban setting. And so it's really good to have you as a part of our community here. And I do remember those early days. I think I remember hearing your voice first at DIW. You were calling for, I think you were working maybe a parents program, and I was participating, and you had given me a call. I know the kids were really involved in DIW, so I was like, I think that's where I met you. And then I talked to you over the phone first, and then I was like, wow, nice.
Yeah, back then when I worked at Division of Indian Work, I worked in their after school program. It was called It was so long ago. Meshkiki Ogichida program. Mm-hmm. And basically it was a commercial tobacco prevention program, but it also had that cultural part to it where we would teach young Native people about traditional uses of tobacco, and even in regards to how to harvest it. And then there was the media component about it, where I would teach these young people after school about video production skills. And then we would go out into the community. Well, first we would write like little scripts, and then we would go out into the community and film just in different places and locations. And we would film either like short documentaries or short narrative pieces, but pretty much turning them into public service announcements. And then we would ask to meet with leadership at different Native organizations around the community. And then we would try and ask them to go smoke-free, commercial tobacco-free on their property. So that was my introduction to the community. And that's where I remember I first met you, because I think I was trying to get your kids enrolled, because I was starting a list of recruitments. And then I think someone had mentioned your name, like, oh, she has some kids and she might be interested. So I think you were one of the people that I made a call out to, and I might have left a message. Oh, but yeah, I remember your name early on. Your last name is memorable.
Yes. I love that work. And is that kind of like the career path that you had set out to do, is like media? And is that what you studied?
Yeah. So I actually grew up in the Los Angeles area and the Native community out there. And so early in my younger years, my mom, she was an aspiring actress. So she was always, you know, trying out for roles. And she was also did a lot of background work on different productions. And of course, she wanted her kids to be involved. So she would take me and my brother and my sister to auditions, but we were always going for like the Native kids. So we would always be having to show up in like our powwow dance clothes and, you know, just try out for different parts. And so that's kind of my early exposure to seeing production, I guess you can say. And then naturally from there, I just got interested. And then I eventually, you know, started getting more interested in high school, where I started taking, you know, basic video production courses in high school. And then, you know, of course, it was a dream to go to like a really cool film school or program, but my grades weren't that good enough. And I ended up getting into a state school, which was California State University Fullerton. And I went through their media program, which was called at the time, it was through like their communications department. And the program was called Radio, Television, Film. And that's where I really just got my early skill set in regards to just kind of a wide variety of types of media making.
Mm-hmm. And what like drew you to doing this? I mean, because it's there's so many different platforms and genres and things, and it just wondering how, as far as your process or your like your appeal to the medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I was in school, I didn't really know what I wanted my focus to be. I think I naturally gravitated toward nonfiction filmmaking, which is documentary work, because I was easily able to apply my culture to it in regards to, you know, just documenting things that I loved, like going to powwows or even doing like cultural performances. My family was really involved in sharing our culture, you know, across the region with different educational institutions like schools and libraries. So I really had this passion, I guess, with sharing with audiences about who Native people are in today's contemporary times. So I guess I naturally gravitated towards the medium of documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all having crazy time with our words today.
Yeah. But yeah. And then I eventually, you know, and I feel like once I started getting more involved and learning from other, I guess you could say filmmakers, I learned that probably is the best approach if you want to make things, that is within your budget, because as you could tell, you know, it takes a lot of resources to create any length of film. So I felt like when you do things more on a lower budget, you're able to do more like run and gun style, like even if you're utilizing like your phone. And back then we didn't have the high tech phone when I was in college. We were barely in that like analog mode at that time. And so we were still really pretty reliant upon, you know, like small handheld cameras. But I just felt like going the nonfiction route was, I guess, like a strategy for me to be able to have the freedom to share more stories that were more personal to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's such a powerful way to present information, and you can really, think about how people are feeling and like the emotions and the soundscaping, and then the visuals, because we are such a powerful people, and there's so many things about our people as Native people that haven't been told or is not in the mainstream. And I think even with recently, I think within the past 5 years or decade, I'm not sure what year it was, but the illuminative data that came out in a general population of how Native people are seen in the society or in the media. And it was really people didn't even know that we were existing. And it's okay. And I think we're so in our community that we don't see it. But when you take a step further and really ask those questions about visibility and the overall consciousness of Native perception and, the bigger population, that was a real wake-up call. So I think it's very powerful what you're doing. And I've seen the number of films that you are producing, and it's very well heavy in culture and showing the beauty and the positive things that are happening as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for recognizing that. I totally agree that just going back to those early 2000s where Illuminative did come out with that report, it was pretty alarming that there's still people within our country that don't believe that we're, alive and thriving. Mm-hmm. And I think that I've noticed that ever since I was a young person, especially growing up so close to, Hollywood, in regards to just seeing all of the films that were coming out and just noticing that we were definitely absent and missing from the dominant narrative. And then the very few parts that Native people would get or that I would see when I was a young person were, depicted back before or late around the late 1800s, early 1900s. And, it was very, very rare to see Native people in contemporary times and not depicted in a stereotypical light. Mm-hmm. So that was something that, kind of lit my fire as a young person is, man, just thinking, man, when I get to an opportunity where I'm able to produce and direct on my own, that I'm definitely going to be trying to look for stories that are missing, mm-hmm. And not that will only educate and bring awareness to topics or issues that we go through to the general population, but really I've always had a passion and I guess a goal is to look for stories that I see that will uplift our young people. Because there's just a lot of negativity when it comes mm-hmm. to sharing our past and, the struggles and the traumas that we've overcome. And sometimes especially when a lot of non-Native people are, in that driver's seat as a producer and director, and they're kind of always fixated, on the negativity mm-hmm. because that's kind of what people, not that they like to see, but they're most interested in why is it like this today? Why is it like that for them? So they're just most interested in a lot of those negative stories that we have gone through in history. So for me, now that I've been producing with Twin Cities PBS, and even though it's for a public audience. I always make sure that I have young Native people in mind as my primary audience when I'm creating and producing for, because I'm always just thinking, how am I going to create superheroes out of some of our community members that I'm highlighting? Because I think it's just necessary to always provide, you know, role models for our young people, and to educate our young people about, you know, our history, but at the same time always focus on the positive and the resiliency and the examples that we need for us to see in our everyday lives. So I think that's what's a little bit different about in general, when you see Native people in that driver's seat as a filmmaker, director, or, you know, a cinematographer, or they're the producers, that we're always trying to create content that will help our people first, that in regards to helping provide that uplifting feeling for us, and that will always depict us in a light that we are overcoming these challenges that we continue to face today. So that's definitely something I try to strive for in all the films that I produce.
Yeah, I love that, because it's, there's so, you know, with our youth, and I love that you have focused on, like, you know, with them in mind, because it's like the, you know, just the state of the world, I feel very somewhat responsible that we're passing all this, you know, there's a lot of heaviness in the world today, but like there's something really to be said about the resistance and the resilience of Native people. And I think we throw that around a lot, like, yeah, we're resilient, but it should be like we literally survived a lot. And I think that's what got me through, like, a lot of the in January and February with the ice stuff, is like, I don't, like, I had in my mind, like, this is, you know, this is how we go out. No. But just all dramatic, but just that resilience and celebrating, because it's like, I don't, you know, we weren't on a larger scale. There's a whole campaign that we were not supposed to make it this far. And to have that positivity and that beauty and our youth, you know, to celebrate and honor and hand that legacy on to them, because we, you know, there is a lot of trauma that we're also giving them as well. But no, I think that's really beautiful, that that's kind of the framework that you work through, and the worldview that you have with, like, our, and you're thinking about the future, and because our ancestors thought of us, and you're doing the same thing. Hey, I'm getting all emotional.
This is kind of out of the blue, but one moment or one experience that I remember having with you that was really, really memorable. And I don't know if you remember this, but I felt like it was maybe 8 years ago, might have been even like 10 or, yeah, around 10 or 9 years ago. We, you and me and Shane, who is my husband now, and Terry Ann, we sat courtside at a Timberwolves game.
Yes, I remember that picture.
Yeah, that was so cool, because I think that's the first and only time that I have sat courtside on. I've been pretty close before, you know, like a couple rows up from the floor, but I've never sat like on the actual court. And I was just in like awe, and it was just so exciting for me. And I just remember, you know, we were just like acting as if we were kids, you know, we were just so exciting. And I mean, we were just happy to be there. And I remember, you know, taking all those pictures with you. And, but yeah, just speaking of our youth and just thinking about all of the, you know, activities that they're involved in. And I love basketball myself, my family. We love basketball, and my kids are on a couple of different teams, and this is a busy time of year for us because, you know, we're always going to tournaments on weekends, and they have practices, a couple times out of the week. So we're always really heavily involved in the sport. And even me, like, I'm in my 40s, and I grew up playing basketball in high school, and I kind of continued playing after in my 20s, like in native leagues and stuff like that. But I've never really, like, you know, super excelled at it. It was just something I had a passion for. But now that I'm getting older, and, you know, we always have to worry about how to stay healthy and, you know, just make movement a part of our routine on a daily basis, because it's definitely helps with, you know, not just our physical health, but our mental and spiritual health as well. So I started playing basketball again, and I got some Native women together, and we are now playing in the Silver Fox League at the YMCA on East Lake Street. So that's really cool. And it's even though it's one of those things that I'm like, oh, we have a game coming up, and I didn't have time to, you know, run or prepare. It just forces me, you know, to keep at it and keep playing, and to show my kids that it's important to keep, you know, moving and to keep following your passions, even, you know, when you get older. And but speaking of basketball, I do have a new film called Medicine Ball, and I've been excited because it's been showing at a few film festivals around this region.
Is it about basketball?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, yes,
girl.
Yeah.
I love that. Silver Foxes. I'm gonna be your one. Hey, I'm gonna do a ceremony for you girls. Hey. No, that sounds awesome. So tell me about Medicine Ball, because that's your newest, I totally missed it. I think I was trying to get tickets, and they're like $800 for the festival. I was like, oh, okay, they're sold out. But I'm manifesting it to see it soon. But tell me about it.
There'll definitely be more opportunities this coming year. But anyhow, so my latest documentary, it's an hour film called Medicine Ball. And it took me like a little over a year and a half to complete. And it's currently on the festival circuit. Last weekend on Saturday, it played as part of the Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival, which was awesome and is always an awesome opportunity to be a part of. And this coming weekend on Saturday, it's going to be a part of the Zeitgeist Minnesota Film Festival that takes place up in Duluth. So, but going back to the film itself, it is about basketball, but it's not only about basketball. It focuses on how Native basketball was born out of the boarding school era. So I follow two Native college athletes. One is Lexis Red Thunder. She's from the Sisseton and Wahpeton people, and she attends the University of Minnesota Morris, and she plays for the women's basketball team, as well as Leroy Fairbanks the fourth, and he's from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and he's also a student at the University of Minnesota Morris and also plays for the team as well. So basically the story is really told through their lens, but also through Sid Bean. So Sid Bean, who is an awesome Dakota filmmaker himself and a historian, he's the father of the awesome Bean sisters. He has several daughters, the twins, Carly and
Kate.
Kate Bean. those are awesome women that I look up to, and I look up to their dad, and their dad really reminds me of my dad. They have this like really, they're really passionate about storytelling. And that's what I always look for in key storytellers, is who can really tell a good story that keeps you, you know, connected and entertained, and will provide that, you know, passionate spirit and an uplifting feeling when they speak about something they really love. And I seen that in Sid Bean. And I got the idea, it was a few years ago when he was actually accepting a Vision Maker Media Award, and this event was happening at our station at Twin Cities PBS, and they were honoring him for his contributions to Vision Maker Media and all of the great projects that he has worked on. His last film was Ohiesa, The Soul of Indian, and that featured his daughter, Kate Bean. And, you know, I always also look for opportunities to learn from other filmmakers. So I really took this opportunity to do that by collaborating with Sid Bean. But it was during his acceptance speech where he talked about this idea of still wanting to create a documentary that highlights Native basketball being born out of boarding schools, because he himself was an amazing basketball player, and he grew up in the boarding school, actually, because his parents worked, I believe it was at the Flandreau Indian boarding school, and his dad was the basketball coach, and his dad also grew up in boarding school. So he has like a lot of, you know, just great history and a lot of stories to tell during that time era. So he, you know, just after I was hearing how passionate he was about this topic, it was definitely something that, you know, lit my fire, because I was just like, man, I love basketball. And I think it's always awesome to tell different stories, like resiliency stories, when it comes to, you know, events that happen where we only see, you know, the negative side to it, and that's boarding schools. And I always hear people say stuff like, if it wasn't for boarding schools, we wouldn't be here today, you know, because so many of our grandparents and great grandparents and parents met in boarding schools. And there was so many interrelational cultural exchanges that took place, you know, people, you know, making relatives with each other, and people giving each other permission to, you know, dance their dance styles and take on cultural, I guess you can say, it was just like a really intercultural exchange that was happening during these boarding schools. And what Medicine Ball really focuses on is how basketball was really served as that symbolism of hope and resiliency for a lot of young people who played it during boarding school, because, you know, it kind of allowed them to, I guess, still practice their traditions. Like Sid Bean in the film talks about how when his dad was growing up, they were allowed to speak their language in practice and on the court in a way it was almost like they were almost given some leniency when it came to the things that they could do, because they were, you know, assets to the school, because the school was making money on the games, because that's just how good Native people were. And they were so good at some of these boarding schools that they were playing the local colleges around them. And here they weren't even a college, but they're playing, you know, already at a college level back then. So, you know, there's just so many different stories that come out of it. But that's kind of the general idea of Medicine Ball, is really looking at, you know, boarding school from a different lens in regards to how did young Native people use the sport of basketball as a way to create community and as a way to create that hope that, you know, and family and connection and camaraderie. So it's definitely, you know, worth seeing. And I think the film participants did an awesome job. And I just am happy to share it during this time as we have it shown at different film festivals across the country.
I love that's beautiful, because as you're talking, I remember She's a academic at the U, and she was non-native, but she asked me if there was any good things that came out of boarding schools. And I think my answer was really fast. And I said, you know, like the intertribal relationship, you know, our network where mm-hmm. one tribal, you know, not necessarily next to them, had some, you know, was introduced to another tribe. And it's like, mm-hmm. So those, there are, you know, and it is our way to look at the, you know, good things too, even when things are challenging, and even when, you know, mm-hmm. atrocities like the boarding schools took place, there's good in that, like, and it's hard. It takes a very spiritually evolved person to see that, but the res ball is, or, you know, it's mm-hmm. totally that spirit was born there with the, you know, our ancestors who experienced and our relatives who are still mm-hmm. alive today that experienced that.
Yeah, and just kind of sharing the history that Native people were actually a part of the creation of the sport, because the guy who created basketball, his name was James Naismith. And there's like so many books that were written about him, but people really believe that he invented the game after watching Native people play lacrosse, traditional mm-hmm. lacrosse. So mm-hmm. if you kind of like compare the two sports, they're very similar, like the goals and the just the way things are played. And I believe James Naismith, he taught at Kansas University, and then he ended up bringing the game to Haskell. Mm. And then there was Sid Bean talks about this conference that took place. Oh, and another person that Sid Bean was really passionate about speaking about was his relative, who is Charles Eastman. And mm. Charles Eastman was the very first Native physician, and he collaborated along with other people from Flandreau, Dakota community, and they collaborated with James Naismith to help him, you know, create the game by having the game played at different YMCA conferences. So I think they say the first time Native people played was at this conference in Big Stone Lake, which is in Minnesota. And they brought this game out, and then they had Native people start playing it. And this was before it went into the boarding schools. It was more or less like a game invented through the YMCA. And so I think it's, you know, people really talk about Naismith and the influence that Native people had around him that really influenced just how the game was played. And then eventually when it went from, you know, the YMCA started integrating into a lot of the boarding schools. And then that's how that game started, you know, that it went with it into the boarding school. So that's why a lot of Native people pretty much been playing since the invention of the game itself. So to me, I found that fascinating, because just growing up, and I always just see so much hype around basketball and res ball, and it's just such a big sport. I was always thinking, man, why is it that game that we're so connected to? And then when I started learning this history myself and, you know, doing the research and interviewing everyone, that's kind of what I found the most interesting, is that we've been a part of this sport from the time of its very creation itself.
Wow. I was just thinking too, I was like, it's so, you know, before I knew that Jamoke guy stole another idea from us, I'm just kidding. I was like, it's so similar to lacrosse. And that's when I, you know, just give little intros on how to play lacrosse, I'd be like, it's kind of like basketball, you know, it's kind of like you're dribbling. And so, yeah, totally. That is super fascinating. Like, and I wouldn't put it past this person, whoever was credited for inventing it. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, who knows what happened, but, you know, we already kind of know how that works, you know.
Yeah, I just love the fact when you were speaking earlier about, you know, how when, you know, I think you said it was a professor that had asked you, was there any good that came out of boarding schools? And that definitely was, you know, something that created a lot of focus for me, because, you know, as a Native filmmaker and doing my best to try and shift the narrative, meaning not always having the spotlight on, you know, the negativity part, mm-hmm. but trying to do my best to shine the light on the positive. But when it comes to shining the light on any type of positivity that also accompanies all of this horrific, tragic, awful things that happen, it creates anxiety because, you know, you're like taking a risk to do that. And it's nice to also attend other film festivals, because especially other film festivals that value Native storytelling, because I've been seeing more and more Native storytellers taking upon that challenge and that risk by telling stories that integrate not only, you know, the harsh and reality of our history, but then they also always start integrating that resiliency factor in it. So it made me feel like just being going to a couple of different festivals that my film has played at, I started seeing in a way that trend happening during this time era. So I was just thankful that, oh, it's not just me, you know, it's everyone else that is doing the work at this time in regards to storytelling, that we're always keeping in mind that we're it's Native people that we want to create these stories for first and foremost. And we want to make sure that they're getting certain messages, you know, through the resiliency and hope, but at the same time, you know, still not just sweeping that other negative past under the rug, but still in a way highlighting it, but really trying to focus the spotlight on, but what now, you know, what do we do with this information and history that we're speaking and or uncovering about? So we're able to, you know, so we're able to set up our young people to walk with that history with strength instead of walking with the trauma, with depression, you know. It's like, how do you carry that information, but you know, in a strong manner, instead of just feeling like shameful about some of the things that happened to our ancestors. So, but yeah, I always talk about the risk that comes with it. So it's for me, it's to help mitigate that. I always make sure that I build, you know, a community around myself through film advisors, other Native people from the community that, you know the history really well. For this project, I had Dr. Brenda Child from the University of Minnesota to be my advisor, to make sure that, you know, she was watching cuts along the way and making sure that she would point out anything that she seen that was, you know, that came off insensitive or that was alarming. Sid Bean himself was not only a subject in the film, but he was also my executive director. So he also was helping me with the story, the crafting of the story itself. And, you know, all along with them, I have, you know, great mentors and people that guide me from Twin Cities PBS that are really knowledgeable about telling, you know, cultural stories with nuance, instead of just kind of like skimming the surface of a lot of the issues that we go through that are similar to different communities. So, you know, I always think it's good to surround yourself with people who are going to be truthful and that might call something out or that might, you know, put up a red flag or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it definitely does come with risk in regards to just how you depict that topic, mm-hmm. which is very sensitive, the boarding school topic in general.
Yes, because we're at so many different levels of trauma and PTSD and anxiety, but we're also at levels, different levels of healing and mm-hmm. understanding and acceptance and like forgiveness. So mm-hmm. as a community, we're just like on this huge spectrum in regards to like healing, because, you know, every generation we've healed certain things, but we've also adapted to different things happening in our society. So it is very, you know, I think I've come across that too, as in being like a very positive person, like being critiqued because it's, you know, like I don't accept the things that are happening, but like I'm just trying to rewire my brain and like set my nervous system, you know, mm-hmm. as a, on a better path so that I can be a better parent so that we can keep our, you know, our legacy going. So I think it's a bigger picture mm-hmm. than that, but yeah, it's totally brave of you to, pull this together and like really be intentional about who you're working with and what that message is coming through and just being thoughtful in every step of the way, because it means that it's a better storytelling experience and, you know, more accurate for our future generations to kind of understand where this beautiful gift of, you know, basketball has, you know, started. And because we don't, you know, I think it's such a part of our life as Native people that we just, you know, I was talking about a basketball tournament in a joke recently, and I was thinking about it too, as just being such a huge part, like a cornerstone in our culture as Native kids growing up. Like everybody played ball. If you didn't play ball, you went to the tournaments, you knew somebody who was always on and cracking. So it is a gift, and I really appreciate how you shape the narrative around that. So you're very talented and gifted. And with that, I'll see you in a little bit. Thank you.
Hey, you're listening to Dallas Goldtooth on the Medicine Bundle on KFAI 90.3.
Support for KFAI comes in part from First Avenue, presenting Jose Gonzalez in the First Avenue Main Room, Tuesday, April 28th. Singer, songwriter, guitarist Jose Gonzalez is back with his latest album, Against the Dying of the Light, an album that continues to expand his trademark folk pop guitar work, gentle vocals, and thoughtful lyrics. His songs have a philosophical bent, exploring far-reaching questions about science, fate, rationalism, and the place of humanity in the universe. Opening the show is Abby Sage. More information about Jose Gonzalez in the First Avenue Main Room is available at first-avenue.com.
Support comes from the YWCA Minneapolis, providing early childhood education for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers in the Twin Cities. For more than 50 years, the YWCA Minneapolis has helped children build confidence, make friends, and develop a love of learning in classrooms where every child feels welcome, supported, and valued. Learn more at ywcamplus.org.
Support for KFAI comes from the Wienery. proudly serving Chicago-style hot dogs, vegan dogs, and hand-cut french fries. With love on the West Bank for over 40 years.
Oh, like I'm home. I'm home. I'm home.
with you I'm